fingers crossed and legs crossed.
It'll finally happen.
Are we going to get this money? Are we going to get this money? What we are going to get is Glenn McGrath, our legend of the game, up next after the news. Big Sports Breakfast Weekend.
I'm Kim Cartwright. Total fire bans for the Midwest Gascoyne, Goldfields Midlands, Perth Metropolitan and parts of the Southwest in WA today, and closures to Serpentine and Avon Valley National Parks. An 11-year-old girl has been grabbed by the waist and pulled to the ground by a stranger who then fled in Launton, north of Brisbane. Queensland police have called for witnesses after the attack on the Francis Road overpass around 3:20 yesterday afternoon. Police say a man approached the girl and pulled her to the ground before running away toward a dark-coloured SUV on Park Lane. The man is described as Caucasian in appearance, with a shaved head, in his early 20s, wearing a light blue t-shirt, running shoes and black shorts. Anyone with information or dash cam footage of the area around the time is asked to come forward. Tasmania's Premier Will Hodgman has written to the Prime Minister to ask for help as blazes continue to burn in the state's wilderness. The Premier is concerned the Commonwealth's natural disaster relief and recovery funding is not enough and will leave the state massively out of pocket.
I've written to the Prime Minister some time ago to outline my concerns.
Meanwhile, social workers will be sent to the Huon Valley to help people recover from the Riveau Road fire, which was downgraded last week to an advice level. Michael Stevens of the Bushfire Recovery Task Force told the ABC living under the threat of fire for weeks takes its toll.
Other people are coming down off the adrenaline that's been pumping through for the last 2 weeks. They have to, I guess, recognise that some effects will come their way, be it frustration or some level of anger or helplessness.
Australian diplomatic posts were forced to close their doors amid protests sparked by the Prime Minister's controversial Israel embassy review last year. An ABC report has revealed embassies were sent urgent security warnings hours before the shock announcement. Two locations were shut in Indonesia amid ongoing protests in the Muslim-majority nation. The Consulate General in its second biggest city, Surabaya, was locked down along with the Foreign Affairs Department office in Sulawesi. The High Commission in Malaysia was also declared off-limits. Australia is in an area that has a very predominant Muslim majority and they should be more sensitive to the feelings of their Muslim neighbours, one protester said. Nationals leader Michael McCormick yesterday defended the Israel embassy review.
The government did everything right. The Prime Minister did everything right.
A Christian woman accused of blasphemy after spending 8 years on death row in Pakistan is still unable to leave the country to join her daughters in Canada. 54-year-old Asia Bibi told family friend Erman Ullah she's being held in a locked room in Karachi and fears for her life amidst death threats. Bibi's ordeal began in 2009 when two fellow farm workers refused to drink from the same container. There was a quarrel and the two Muslim women later accused Bibi of blasphemy. The Supreme Court judges said there were widespread inconsistencies in the testimony against Bibi, who has steadfastly maintained her innocence. Bibi's case has brought international attention to Pakistan's blasphemy law, which carries an automatic death sentence for a conviction of insulting Islam. There have been widespread complaints the law is used to settle scores and intimidate religious minorities. Also in news, a 19-year-old man has been punched to the ground and knocked unconscious in a Sydney pub car park as police look for a possible attacker. And the federal government will provide a $662 million funding boost to enable the elderly to carry on living in their own homes. This is AIR News. Western Sydney Wanderers have posted a scrappy 2-0 win over the last-placed Mariners to end their record winless run of 10 straight matches. The victory lifted the Wanderers back above Brisbane into 8th spot and puts them 7 points clear of the last-placed Mariners with 9 games to go. Wanderers coach Marcus Babbel says he's proud.
I'm not saying this because we won it, because it was a very, very difficult game for the boys and they did many things right, especially defensive-wise, and also we created a couple of good chances and this time we scored, and yeah, I'm very happy for the boys.
Pat Cummins couldn't be happier with his form after seamlessly switching into white ball mode, knocking over the Big Bash's two best batsmen ahead of Australia's limited overs tour of India. Cummins, who started the week celebrating Man of the Series honours following Australia's emphatic test win over Sri Lanka, returned to Manuka Oval last night and donned his Sydney Thunder cap. The express paceman earned Man of the Match honours in the Thunder's 4-wicket win over the ladder leaders Hobart Hurricanes, hitting the winning run after dismissing Darcy Short and Matthew Wade. It wasn't enough to keep the Thunder's Big Bash season alive, however. Conor Murray and Jacob Stockdale and Keith Earls have scored tries to help Ireland to a 22-13 win over Scotland in the Six Nations, and Geelong lost to Western Bulldogs in AFLW, while the Breakers beat the Hawks and Taipans beat the Bullets in NBL. Australian Independent Radio News.
Don't whinge and whine about the traffic. Think of the wine you'll have at home. A glass of Windy Peak Cabernet Merlot by De Bortoli, of course. Here's the traffic.
Choose McDonald Jones to build a home you've always dreamed of, because life's too short for ordinary. To find out more about your dream home, visit McDonald Jones Oran Park Display Homes today. In North Narrabeen, avoid Wakehurst Parkway near Eleanora Road. It is closed in both directions due to an earlier accident. You can expect delays of up to 30 minutes. In Pymble, emergency roadworks in place on Ride Road at Minamara Avenue. One southbound lane is closed there. And in Merrylands, lights are blacked out on Merrylands Road at Military Road. Kmart has dropped prices on even more products, and they are here to stay. Head in store for incredible value across homewares, apparel and toys for the whole family. See website for details. I'm Solomon Gates, number one in racing on Sky Sports Radio.
The Polytrack Provincial Championships are back. Experience Sunday racing at its finest at Hawkesbury Race Club's first provincial qualifier on Sunday, February 24. Featuring live music, kids entertainment and great prizes. Treat your family to a fun day at the races. Catch the train and hop off at Clarendon or park for free. Entry only $10. Free for ATC members, children, concession card holders and TAB Rewards members. Details and bookings at hawkesburyraceclub.com.au.
Punters, we bet you. You can't find a better betting app than the TAB app. With more live Sky Racing than any other app, exclusive race previews and the biggest range of race replays on offer, you have everything you need to give you the best betting experience all in the palm of your hand. Plus, enjoy access to detailed form, cutting-edge data and expert analysis from the best in the business. Download the TAB app today and stay ahead of the game. TAB. Terms and conditions apply. See tab.com.au. Gamble responsibly.
Sky Sports Radio, Sydney weather.
Sydney weather now is forecast for Sydney. Sunny.
Click on that Sydney forecast icon, mate.
South to southwesterly, 15 to 20 kilometres an hour, turning east to southeasterly in the afternoon, then becoming light in the evening, Ray. There's a 0% chance of rain. That's good. A sunny day, and 25 degrees is the expected maximum. Toongabby right now, and Taree for the races today, Raymond.
Toongabby, sunny day as well. Currently 20 degrees, heading for a top of 26 for the races at Taree. Beautiful part of the world, isn't it, Taree?
Magnificent.
Top temperature day of 26 degrees. Beautiful sunny day in Taree.
The Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy Smith and Ray Thomas.
Now, welcome back to the program. It's the final hour now. It's a massive hour coming up. Glenn McGrath is our legend of the game. We'll get to Glenn very shortly. We'll have a sports update with Tanya. We'll do our A-League and EPL wrap with Phil Moss. We're going to talk the Indigenous All-Stars and the New Zealand Maori All-Stars game with Laurie Daly. We'll have our Victorian listener in Trent Langscale along, and we'll try and fit in a couple of calls, 13:53:53. And the talk topic today is old blokes and Sheila's getting it done, and that is, of course, on the back of Tom Brady, aged 41 years of age, being a winner of his sixth Super Bowl ring, which is just quite incredible. Our legend of the game, though, we're lucky enough to work with him last night on a rival radio network, which we can't mention at this point, but just to run through some numbers, 124 test matches, 250 ODIs, just the, 563 test wickets.
Still reckon he retired too early. Would love to see him go on a bit longer. But
well, we can ask him why he did retire. It's our great pleasure to welcome to the program Glenn McGrath. G'day, Glenn.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Yeah, morning, really, man. Well. Thanks for your time this morning. We do appreciate it. Mate, we ask all our legends about this. Cricket, how did it have become a part of your life out in the Western blocks of New South Wales?
Oh, just as a kid, just always played, you know, in the backyard with my cousins and my brother, and then just at school. So it was just, I just played for fun and enjoyed it, and as simple as that.
Any other sports, Glenn, or was cricket all-consuming for you?
My parents came into Narromine, from the farm to play tennis every Wednesday night and on the weekend. So I started playing tennis when I was seven, mm-hmm. and played a bit of rep tennis around New South Wales, and then a bit of golf through school. And then in my early teens, I started to play a fair bit of basketball. And basketball started to go off, played a fair bit of rep stuff there. And then I got invited to play a game of cricket over in Parkes at Tui's Country Cup and match. And then from there, I got invited down to Sydney. So cricket took off, and you know, out of all the sports I played, cricket was the one I loved the most.
Was there a desire to make a living and a career out of cricket at that time of your life, Glenn?
I was when I got invited down, I was 18 going on 19, and I was just playing Saturday afternoon to the bush in a small country town. And so I guess, you know, if you asked me back then if I could choose any job, it was to play cricket for Australia and as a fast bowler. But when I was 18, there was probably no chance of that happening. And then within the year, I moved to Sydney and sort of the rest, within 4 years, was playing for Australia. So it all happened very quickly.
Were you living in a caravan?
When I first moved to Sydney, didn't know anyone, so bought a caravan dubbo, towed that down, and lived in that by myself for the first 13 months out of home in the big city, just on Botany Bay, down Ramsgate, Chantuzzi area. It's no longer a caravan park there anymore, but so that was how I moved to the city, started off.
And how did you get to the Sutherland District Cricket Club? Who was the connection there?
I was Doug Walters played in that Tui's Country Cup match and thought I had a little bit of potential. Mentioned me to Steve Rickson, who was captain coach at Sutherland.
Right.
And got the invite down. It was funny, about 6 months prior to that, one of the guys, I think it was Trevor Houlihan from Penrith, came out and had a look at me in Narromine, and he said, oh, looks okay, but nothing special. So I didn't get the invite for Penrith, but ended up coming down for Sutherland.
Penrith is still kicking
himself. Exactly.
He never lived it down either.
I was about to say, yeah. Well, you mentioned, Glenn, that your rise through the ranks was very quick, and you made your test debut in Perth against New Zealand the 93-94 summer. Can you tell us what it was like to get that first baggy green?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I'd only played, six, seven games for New South Wales, so I was just loving everything to do with first-class cricket. And here I was preparing for my first test match, so I don't think I really had time to be nervous or what have you. It was just, I was just enjoying myself so much, and next thing you know, I'd had a couple of tests under the belt. So in one sense, I think that probably helped me. And then I learned more about my game probably when I made the test level. So that combined with my couple of years at the Cricket Academy really got me going.
What was the best feature of your bowling, Glenn? I mean, a lot of people, you know, you weren't express pace, but you were quick enough. Bounce was significant because of your height. Your accuracy is almost a byword. Was it all of those things put together?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, I always try, if I could bowl 100 mile an hour, I would have been bowling 100 mile an hour. I don't worry about that. But talking to guys like Brian Lara and Sachin Tendulkar, they always said it was far harder facing someone who, you know, got bounced rather than pace and skidded on. So, you know, if guys bowling 150 skidding on, they said was easy to face than guys bowling, you know, 140, high 130s, low 140s, that really got that bounce. And when I try to bowl really quick, I've probably lost that little bit of that bounce. So I just try to stay tall, bowl the ball where the batsman didn't want it, with that control, with that bounce. And I think by having that control I had, allowed me to set very aggressive field placements. And the batsman only had to make one mistake and he was out. So I think I worked that out fairly quickly. And then, you know, when you've got guys like Mark Taylor, Shane Warne, Mark Waugh, Ricky Ponting, those guys in the slips, makes your job pretty easy.
Yeah, they don't drop too many, do they? Glenn, the 1995 series against the West Indies in the West Indies was famous for so many reasons. Was that the coming of age of Glenn McGrath? Because injury and circumstance, all of a sudden, you were Australia's number one fast bowler on that tour.
Yeah, it's funny. From second grade right up to the Australian team, I got an opportunity because the guy in front of me got injured.
Right. Okay.
And I grabbed that opportunity, and when they came back to fitness, I was sort of cemented in the team. So the West Indies, I guess, was another example of that, where Craig McDermott, who was Australia's strike bowler at the time, got injured, did his ankle. Damien Fleming, who was also in the team, did his shoulder. And it sort of really gave me a chance to lead the attack, and we came up with a fairly aggressive game plan that we're going to go hard at the West Indies, especially their fast bowlers.
Whose idea was that, Glenn? Who was it? A team idea? Was it your idea? Was it Tubby's or Steve Waugh's? Or?
Oh, it was a bit of a team idea, I think. I think the guys that had played the West Indies previously had been, you know, caught in the fire plenty of times with short stuff. So Mark Taylor, Steve Waugh were very keen for our bowlers to give it back. And, yeah, that was the game plan. I was more than happy to come out and do that. I thought I was going to cop it anyway, so might as well get in early. And I think that was quite significant when we went hard at their bowlers, you know, showed them that we weren't, you know, going to back down, that we're here for a challenge and here for the battle. And, you know, that had a big impact on that series and probably my career, and kick-started it off from there.
Retaliate first, as they say.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was at that point that you felt like you belonged? A lot of the people we speak to as legends talk about a moment, a match, something happens, and they feel like they belong at the highest level. Was there a moment for you?
Oh, there's probably two significant moments when I started my career. The first one was after the first test. I felt that this level of cricket wasn't beyond me.
Yeah.
So that sort of held me in good stead. And then the first match on that West Indies tour 95 in Barbados, I took my first five wicket haul in Test cricket. And I think that feels like, okay, I've now contributed to the team. I'm making a difference. And that fills you with plenty of confidence as well.
Glenn, so many iconic series from that period onwards, because it was a golden era in Australian cricket. I'm always really interested in that 1997 Ashes tour of England, when things seemed to be going wrong for Australia at the time. Glenn Tubby was out of form. Two tests were gone. Australia was 1-0 down. I know this was Australian side full of champions, but was there any doubt at that period of the Ashes series that, hang on, things could be going awry here, we could be shot?
Oh, I don't think there was any period with that. I think after the first test at Edgbaston, where we got absolutely hammered, England won by 10 wickets, and we bowled pretty poorly, bowled the wrong length, or Australian length rather than the English length. And I remember the next day, we were out in the middle bowling off our long runs the day after the test finished for about 2 hours, getting that length right.
Wow.
And I think that made a significant difference, because then we went into the next test at Lords.
Yeah.
Where
Rain,
we bowled out for 77. Yeah. I picked up a few wickets in the first innings, and I think that changed the whole tone of the series. The match was washed out in the end, with Australia well on top, but that changed the tone, and from then on we just dominated.
One of the things that I think you sort of bucked the trend, everyone thinks, you know, the big fast bowler and they've got no brains, that they're at the top of their run and they're just charging in, but you're very analytical in your approach to cricket. Is that your personality trait, or is that something you applied to your professional career mostly?
Oh, I think it's those dopey batsmen trying to make themselves sound smarter by putting the bowler down to start.
Yeah, there'd be a bit of that.
But no, I think my goal when I played was to play what I classed the perfect game, where every ball went exactly where I wanted it to go, and I guess control the controllables, I guess you could say. That was sort of my motto, so just try to keep it really simple. Not let the batsman sort of worry me with what he's doing, just stick to my plan. And I just think if you come up with a game plan, it's about being able to execute it. And if you've got a bowling plan, you can execute it. If it's not working, you can change it and adapt it. But if you can't, you know, execute a bowling plan, then it doesn't matter what you do. So that was the most important thing to me. And then working with the guy at the other end, you know, when you had guys like Jason Gillespie and especially Shane Warne at the other end, you could really work together, build up pressure, and knock teams over.
Did you ever have that perfect match?
I went close. A one-day match in Wellington in New Zealand, where I reckon I bowled 59 balls out of the 60 exactly where I wanted it.
Wow. Gee, there you go. What about legend has it, Glenn, that you can recall each of your 563 test wickets. Is that correct?
Not anymore. Okay. I used about when I had about 360, 370, I could sit there and write them down in order and picture how they got out. A little bit long in the tooth now, and I remember I used to do a few speaking gigs and things here and there, and that was a bit of a party trick. I could work it out, how many wickets I had at the start, finish of the series, break it down for each test, and generally break it down to a certain batsman. I never had thought I was absolutely incredible. And then a thing called Google came along,
yeah.
So then they could actually check up on me, so it made a little bit tougher. But, yeah, that the wickets was my motivation to go there and take as many as I can. So some tours I remember, a little bit long in the tooth now, so the brain doesn't work as well anymore.
No, I understand.
What you used to do, though, is just predict every series win. that became a regular occurrence during an Australian summer. Where did that come from, Glenn? What was the purpose of that?
I guess, to me, team was the most important. So team always came first. But, for an individual, you can still make yourself stand out within a team environment without taking anything away from it. And I just looked at the team we had and felt if we play as well as we can, then no one's going to get close to us. Mm. Secondly, I felt that when there was a little bit of pressure on the team, that brought the best out of us. So that was a way that I could put a little bit of pressure back on the team. There was a few boys in there that felt that they hated me doing it, guys like Ricky Ponting and Damien Martin. But by the end of my career or our careers, they just thought, oh, that's what he does. So they didn't worry too much. And the third thing was coming out and predicting or targeting a batsman.
Yeah.
I remember watching the West Indies of the late 70s, early 80s, and they seemed to target the captain. And when they got on top of him, it had a big effect on the whole team. Mm. So I thought I'd come out and do that. Had a bit of success against certain guys like, Atherton, like Gary Kirsten, Brian Lara, those guys. So I thought if I come out, put a bit of target them, put a little bit of extra pressure on them, if I got them out in the first test once or twice, then the media did the rest. and if they were good enough to beat me at my own game, I could live with that. So it was just the way I challenged myself, but also, I guess make yourself stand out from the rest of the team while still not having a negative impact.
No, I understand. Well, obviously pressure didn't bother you as such, Glenn, and I think one of the great things that cricket lovers and sports fans admire about you was, the pressure you must have been under during your first wife Jane's illness, and you still were able to maintain that extraordinarily high level of bowling at test match level. It must have been tough for you though, Glenn.
Playing cricket, I did that because I enjoyed it. What happened off the field with Jane and with everything was real life, and so you do what you have to do, and I guess cricket was a bit of an escape where as soon as you walk on the field, cross that white line, you can focus 100% on what you're looking to achieve out there. And didn't matter how tough it got out there, I always had in the back of my mind that I'm out there, we're out there because we want to be out here. So, that was just always in the back of my mind. What was happening at home was real life, and we just did whatever we could to get through. And, you realise pretty quickly what's important in life, and it's all these little things we worry about are not really important. It's the people you have in your life, your close friends and your family. And I've been very lucky with the people I've had in my life. So, even though there's been tough times, I do consider myself a very lucky person.
Yeah, great way to look at it. Mm. First among equals, the batsman you bowled against?
There's a couple. There's always a batsman on any given day can do well. But there's probably a few standouts. BVS Lakshman did pretty well against Australia. But the two that I reckon would be, Tendulkar and Lara, the two sort of obvious suspects, I guess you could say. Both quality batsmen, some of the best of all time. And, Tendulkar, 200 tests, the amount of runs he scored on his day, he was awesome. But always felt that I could just change his game. He would wait for a bad ball. Whereas Lara, you couldn't change his game. He wanted to go out there. He wanted to entertain. Just wanted to play all the shots, hit boundaries, and a very flamboyant batsman. So I try to use his ego against him. It worked 15 times in tests, and the other times he got hundreds and big hundreds and double hundreds. So depending on the day, Brian was a little bit interesting, where some days he was focused, other days he was all over the place. So I put Brian slightly in front of Sachin because he was just a, just a quality. He just, you couldn't hold him back. And when it was his day and he was focused, there was not much you could do.
Well, what about captains you played under, Glenn? Because you played under some...
Yeah,
some great Australian captains, Mark Taylor, Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting, etc. I guess they all had their own strengths.
Oh, they did. And, it's hard to really separate them and say who was the best because, they took the team over at a different time and moved it to a different level. So AB brought Australia up from, the bottom of the pile. And when he finished off, there was he passed on a pretty good team to Mark Taylor. But I think AB's attitude was, let's get in a position to win before going for a win. So just consolidate and work there, which is understandable where he brought the team from. Then Mark Taylor brought a different attitude about, okay, let's go for a win from ball one, a little bit more aggressive form of the game, which I like. Mm-hmm. He passes a very good team over Steve Waugh, and then Stephen said, okay, let's go for a, not only go for a win from ball one, let's crush them from first ball. Sort of his favourite word was ruthless. Mm-hmm. And then poor old Rick, where do you take the team from there? And, Rick did an amazing job, went on to win two World Cups, win in India for the first time.
Yeah.
Had seven senior players retire in a two-year period and still held the team together pretty well. So very lucky with the captains I played under. And always I get asked who was the best, and I can't separate it. Mm-hmm. So for the first time a few years back, I did put down my best 11 Australian cricketers that I played with, and three of those guys were in the team, and I made AB captain. And I think if you ask the other three, they would agree 100% with that. AB, he's got the respect of the players. He's probably one of the toughest cricketers that's ever played the game. And for what he did for Australian cricket, it was pretty amazing. So he was, I put him down as the captain of that team. Mm.
We've got to go, but I just want to... You realise you cost Australia the Test Series, the Ashes, in 2005. 4th of August.
I'm sure about that.
Well, the ankle.
You trot on, what happened there? You trot on the ball and that's it.
Yeah, we got to the ground half an hour earlier than we normally do, which why I don't know, because I'm very much with routines and keeping things very similar. And normally I stuff around the change rooms, get out to the for warm-up just as we're ready to go, and off we go. And this day, got out there, we're still half an hour to go before we start. So I'm just standing there, and Brad hadn't picked up the rugby league ball, and we start just passing it back and forth. You know, pretty sort of simple thing, innocuous. And he threw this terrible pass that bounced halfway between him and I and just rolled along the ground, so I missed it. So I just turned to run and pick the ball up. Little did I know the coach had gone out and put the cricket balls out behind us, ready for us to warm our shoulders up. And I still don't remember seeing the cricket ball. First step, trot on it, went, all my weight went on it, and I went down. I remember going down knowing I'm in serious trouble, and the rest is history. So I still don't remember seeing that ball. So I've been to Edgbaston a couple of times since, and they want to put a little plaque on that bit of the ground. And a lot of English people still reckon that that's their favourite sporting moment. So it's, one of those things that you wish never happened. Mm. At the time again, but it was just something simple. We weren't doing anything stupid. It was just the way it turned out.
Yeah. All right. We'll blame Haddon for that one. Glenn, great to have you on the program. Really appreciate it. I know the listeners are appreciating it already. The feedback we're getting via SMS. Thanks for your time. Good luck with the rest of this season, and of course we look forward to hearing you across Channel 7 and your various media outlets.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn McGrath there, legend of the game. That is pretty special.
Don't forget, 9 a.m. Monday morning, Punters Post-Mortem with me, TK, the Duff, Dino and Glenn Munsey. A full wrap of a cracking Warwick Farm meeting with the baby stepping out in the $2 million English millennium. And in Melbourne, it's the start of the Group 1 for the CF4 Stakes. Punters Post-Mortem, Monday morning.
Bradman, Freeman, Labour, Thorpe. Witness sporting immortality at the Star Chinese Festival of Racing at Royal Randwick this Saturday. Be trackside as stakes racing in the world's best horse, Wings. Return to Royal Randwick for the Star Apollo Stakes. Don't miss an exciting day of racing, hospitality and Lunar New Year entertainment. Advance tickets from $12. Book now at theraces.com.au.
Look, I'm afraid I'm leaving you. I know you've always been so good to me. You're always there when I need you. And the fact is, I still really love you. But, this is so hard. I have to move on. The guys are already on the beach.
Hate saying goodbye to your radio? Download Radio App on your phone and take your favourite station anywhere. Radio App, free from the App Store and Google Play.
China Doll, the award-winning restaurant located at the historic Finger Wharf at Woolloomooloo, takes creative dining in Sydney, Raymond, to another level. China Doll offers an innovative menu, impressive cocktail list, personalised service and spectacular views of the Sydney skyline. Their menu showcases a modern take on culinary traditions from China, Hong Kong, Japan and Southeast Asia. And the chili salt squid and king prawns are out of this
and
world.
And Sichuan, whatever it's called.
Dine where the racing industry dines, all under the expert eye of restaurateur Steve Anastasio. For bookings, call 02-9380-6744 or visit the website chinadoll.com.au.
On the Big Sports Breakfast weekend, with a sports update, here's Tanya Thomas.
In the battle of the A-League cellar dwellers last night, the Wanderers beat the Central Coast 2-0. The home victory ends a club record of 10 games winless run, but significantly that lifts them 7 points clear of the last place Mariners. In the later game, Melbourne City and Adelaide drew 1-1. Today, victory host Perth. The Sydney Thunder knocked over minor premiers Hobart by 4 wickets in last night's BBL match in Canberra. The win, however, not enough to put the Thunder into the finals. In the early match, Adelaide beat Perth by 5 wickets. The second place Sixers play Melbourne Stars this afternoon. Still with cricket, and the New South Wales women's team won its third consecutive and 20th overall national title, defeating Queensland by 31 runs in yesterday's final at North Sydney Oval. The Canberra Capitals are 1 win away from claiming the WNBL championship after an 88-67 win over Adelaide last night in Canberra. The Capitals overcame a fast start from the Lightning to strike the first blow in the best of three grand final series. Game two is in Adelaide on Wednesday. Meantime, in the NBL, New Zealand beat Illawarra 96-81 and Brisbane went down to last place Cairns 79-68. Today, fresh from an amazing win over Melbourne on Friday night at home, the top of the table Kings have another tough one. They play the Wildcats in Perth, while Melbourne takes on the 36ers in Adelaide. The road to the 2019 championships begin today with the first of the country championship qualifiers at Dubbo. A Martin Place pick is the favourite for the race, which is race 7, showing $2.40 on tab fixed odds, followed by Westlink at $3.90. The first two past the post go into the $500,000 final, which is run at Randwick on April 6. Australia and the USA are locked at one rubber apiece after day one of the Fed Cup World Group tie in North Carolina. Ash Barty defeated Sophia Kennan in the first match 6-1, 7-6. Then Madison Keys levelled it up with a straight sets win over Kimberly Birrell. Ash and Daria Gavrilova will play Kennan and Keys in the doubles tomorrow morning. Liverpool is back on top of the English Premier League table as resurgent Man United joined them in the top four. Liverpool beat Bournemouth 3-0 to go 3 points clear of Man City, while United's 3-0 win over Fulham lifted them above Chelsea into fourth spot. Tottenham sits in third. In other results, Crystal Palace and West Ham had a 1-1 draw. Huddersfield 1, Arsenal 2. Southampton 1, Cardiff 2. Watford 1, Everton 0. And Brighton 1, Burnley 3. Wade Ormsby is the outright leader at 15-under heading into the final round today of the Victorian Golf Open. The South Australian is 2 ahead of Matt Steiger and Callum Shinquin, while American Kim Kaufman leads the women's comp by 2 shots. Aussie Sue Oh will play in the final group this afternoon. She's in a tie for second. At the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, it's a third round this morning. Paul Casey leads at 15-under. Lucas Glover is at 12-under. Then there are 6 players on minus 10. Jason Day is at minus 9. And Robert Whittaker is out of his UFC 234 middleweight title defence against Kevin Gastelum, which was at Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne today. He reportedly fell ill last night and is having surgery on a hernia today. Gastelum will not remain on the card, boys. Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva have been elevated to that main event slot. Mm. The UFC is offering a full refund to ticket buyers. They just have to go to the point of purchase to get a full refund.
Disappointing, isn't it? Mm.
Very disappointing for him too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and his and his crew.
Hometown title defence and all.
Yeah, and I do believe it was sold out.
Mm.
So those who've bought on pay-per-view, I'm not sure what's happening with those.
You could point out.
Yeah, we'll
no,
try
actually.
And find that out. But, yeah, the UFC are offering a full refund.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally understand that. Disappointing there for Robert Whittaker. Yeah. He is a star. Well, I was going to say in the making, but he is now. Just got to find out about it. Raymond, I've got to ask you about Road to the Championships, a new show that you're on, another show.
That's Tuesday night, 7:30.
Okay. Tell us about it.
A bit like our every show in spring, sort of transferred to autumn. Slightly different bent this year.
Oh.
Is this
a tease for the viewers?
Oh, no, Greg Radley's still hosting.
Right.
Myself and Julie Snook will be there, and Michelle Bishop from Channel 7 also joining the lineup.
Okay, all right. Then.
And News Central's back Wednesday night as well.
All right, we can look forward to that as well. 13:53.
Both on Channel 528. Nice little plug there.
Yeah, nice little plug, yeah. Is there anything else you want to plug?
No, that's all. Thank
you. Okay. You probably want to plug Liverpool Football Club,
absolutely.
Do you?
Absolutely.
Phil Moss is on the line. He'll want to plug him as well. Hello, Mossy.
Top of the morning to you, boys.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Morning,
I
Phil.
I sprung out of bed this morning. Yeah. How are you?
Good. Did you watch the game, 3-0 against Bournemouth, Liverpool?
Yeah, back to winning ways, Ray. And look, it's we've come in for a bit of criticism.
Have we?
By two in the last. We have, Ray, haven't we? Meanwhile, our mate sitting next to you is in the top four for the first time since match day one of the
season. I told you.
He predicted this.
Yeah, he did. Well, predicted what?
The change
they
of coach would...
the top four, that they'd end in the top four.
I said they will finish top four.
Mm. Right, change
okay.
of coach,
you
top four.
Your manager. Prediction hasn't come true yet.
Yeah, we're not done yet either.
Exactly.
On the march.
Top three.
But look, it's still Man City have that game in hand tomorrow morning against Chelsea, and they could reclaim top position on the ladder again, even though they have at one extra game in Liverpool.
Could be the capital C, right? It's a fantastic game, that one. Chelsea bounced back after a drubbing a couple of weeks ago, and they scored five goals last game. But Man City have lost three and won two of their last five against Chelsea, and only scored four goals in the process. And Chelsea have won only two out of their nine last visits to the Etihad, six losses and a draw. So it sort of evens itself out, which lends itself to a draw.
Mm.
And that's what I'm going to predict. I'm going to predict a draw in this one, and call it wishful thinking if you like. But I just think Chelsea may go and cause them some problems based on history. An intriguing game, that one. Spurs take on Leicester as well. They host Leicester. And they've won three out of their last four against Leicester, so you wouldn't imagine Leicester changing their record of only one win in 11 away to London sides. So I think Spurs will get a comfortable win there, although Leicester did hold Liverpool to a draw last week, as we know. So anything's possible in the Premier League. That's why we love it.
Hang on a minute. You're tipping a draw between Manchester City and Chelsea at $4.20 at tab.com.au.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's...
Yeah.
That's your heart, not your head. So anyway, just a little asterisk next to that one, listeners. Just be aware of that.
I never tip with my heart.
That is a lie. I can't believe you've now told a lie on live radio. Aussies in action. Huddersfield, they were down to Arsenal at home. And the other one that we're looking at, I think he got a few past him too. Three, in fact. Poor old Matty Ryan for Brighton Hove Albion, beaten 3-1 by Burnley.
Yeah, that's right. And he was left. He was hung out to dry, Matty Ryan, really, by his back line. They left him standard on all three occasions, and couldn't pull the big saves off in this one. But Chris Wood, the New Zealand international, scored two of them, so he would have got extra delight of Kiwi scoring against an Aussie. 26th and 61st minute for Chris Wood, and Aaron Moy. Yeah, he took part in that game late on the last pass for the own goal. By Kolasinac in that game in the 93rd minute. Nice little through ball from Moy, but the pinball in the box, and they caught one. But look, not looking good for Huddersfield at all. They are rock bottom of the Premier League, and with seemingly no way out, to be honest.
Yeah, in deep relegation zone. A-League this weekend, Sydney FC gave up a 1-0 lead up at Brisbane. Shock loss there, 2-1. Mossy, what went wrong?
Yeah, look, well, the first half and in front of goal went wrong, Ray. It should have been out of sight for Sydney by half time. It wasn't, and you always leave yourself open there. De Silva scored in the 55th minute. So despite all the chances they had in the first half, The first goal didn't come until the 55th. Well taken by De Silva, but then Tobias Mikkelsen and Dylan Wenzel-Holt, who scored an absolute bomb in the 90th minute to put the result beyond doubt for Brisbane. But look, you've got to give it to Brisbane. They've had a season from hell. Darren Davies, the caretaker coach, has certainly got a tough job up there, taking over from John Aloisi, and Ross Aloisi's departed. So you can't begrudge them getting the 3 points, and they fought to the death. And we all know Brisbane are famous for getting late wins up there at Suncorp Stadium, and they've done it again. So big blow for Sydney FC in the premiership race.
Mm. How bad are the Mariners? The Wanderers beat them.
Honestly, you talk about dead rubbers. Well, this was dead rubber. But yeah, look, Western Sydney, it'll be good for their camaraderie, or put it whatever way you want, but it means very little on the table. But Elrich and Soterio got the goals. The Mariners just can't buy a trick. And Mike Mulvey, after the game, his post-match presser, I saw some comments that he thinks they've done exceptionally well the last 7 weeks, but at the end of the day, it is a results-driven business. So they haven't, they've just got nothing to show for it. One win, I think, in that 7 week stretch. But I'm convinced the players in that dressing room can't wait for the season to end.
Hey, Phil, Melbourne City 1, Adelaide United 1, but the big one is this afternoon.
This is big.
One play 2, Perth Glory versus Melbourne Victory.
Yeah, it should be a cracker. Just on that last one, Melbourne City, Adelaide, the headline out of that is Jamie McLaren scoring his first game for Melbourne City, so that's certainly a great sign for them. But, yeah, all the attention is on this afternoon's match down there in Melbourne, Victory against Perth. Perth hold a 4-point lead over Victory with 9 games left. Big news is Honda's back. Whether he starts or comes off the bench, probably the bench if I was a betting man, which I'm not, Jimmy.
And, well, you're not. You're tipping Chelsea at 4:20 to draw with Man City.
I want to give our listeners good odds, mate. I want to give them a good bet. That's a good bet. But anyway, back to the business. I'm going to tip a draw in this one. There you go.
Okay.
Just to stay consistent. But the interesting news coming out of Perth this one in the lead up to this game is whether Castro is the best import in A-League history. Tony Pinata, the CEO over there at Perth, who was formerly CEO at Sydney, and helped sign Del Piero, has come out and said he thinks Castro is the best import that the A-League's seen, which is interesting.
Your thoughts?
I disagree. I would go between Thomas Bruich and Milos Ninkovic for sheer quality. And maybe, Castro has been outstanding. He's definitely in the conversation. There's no doubt about that. But I just think he's been a little bit too hit and miss. He hasn't been part of a team that's won anything. And Ninkovic and Bruich have been the absolute linchpin towards premiership and championship winning sides.
Yes. No, my limited knowledge of the A-League, I think Thomas Bruich should be the one that's had the consistent success and delivered championships, premierships.
Yeah.
So there you go. Anything else you want to tip the middle of, a draw and anything else you want to go with? Or?
I've got a few splinters this morning.
Yeah, tell you what. Fantastic. 3.55, by the way, that draw, if you think Mossy is right with the Melbourne Victory up against Perth Glory. 3.10, the Glory. 2.20, the Melbourne Victory. It is a very important game for this A-League season. Good on you, Mossy.
As I said, Jimmy, I do like to give the listeners some value, so I'm going to tip a score draw, and I'm going to tip 1-1.
1-1. Okay.
So I might just add a little bit to the kitty.
There you go. And we will hold you to that next time we speak to you, which will be next Sunday. Good on you, mate. Enjoy your day. We'll speak then.
You too, guys. Enjoy your Sunday. Enjoy your sport.
Oh, Mossy, well nailed it.
Here comes the siren.
Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
Yeah, look, doesn't get enough of a chance to have his say during the course of the week, Monday to Fridays from 5:30 to 9. So what he said, he lobbied our program and said, look, I want to get on there and talk about the Indigenous All-Stars versus the New Zealand Maori All-Stars.
Is the real story you drove Paul Laurie mad to come on?
Well, unconfirmed at this point. The good thing is that the Indigenous All-Stars coach, Laurie Daly, has joined us on the line. G'day, Loz.
Jimmy, Ray, how are you, boys?
Yeah, really well. How's Melbourne? You down in Melbourne yet?
No, we fly down at lunchtime, so 12:35. No, just packing your bags and getting myself ready to get down there and get involved.
Well, get involved indeed, and you've been involved previously. We hear from the players a lot about what it means to them to be involved in this game. What about from a coaching perspective, Laurie?
Oh, just as much as the players, Jimmy. We certainly love the involvement. It's more than just a game. It's what we do out there in the community, and you know, we get to share our culture and talk about things that we can do for everyone in the community. We learn a lot about our culture. We do a lot of sessions with young Indigenous kids that come down from the bush and spend a bit of time with the players, and they realise the impact that they can have within the group. And then, of course, we try and prepare for a game. That's probably secondary to football, even though that's why they're all selected to do. But they take a lot out of it. It's good education for everyone involved, and we learn a lot more about not only our culture, but also the New Zealand Maori culture as well, because we interact with them during the week as well.
Mm. Yeah, Laurie, good point you make. Has the NRL got it right this time? I think the New Zealand Maori decision to include that team against the Indigenous All-Stars, I reckon it hits the mark.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Ray, and I think we've always sort of been challenged with what's the right concept and when's the right time to play this game. But with the NRL All-Stars, it was, you know, good players coming together but not really having a strong reason to play well, and they didn't really know who they were against with the two cultures that are playing on Friday night. We are representing our people, our Indigenous culture, and it'll mean a lot to both groups of players. So it's a game that I always look forward to, because it's more than a trial. It's very passionate. We always tend to get a lot of people there and support, and this one down there in Melbourne will be no different.
Who's the player you're most looking forward to working with? And it's littered with stars across this Indigenous All-Stars side. Latrell Mitchell has said no to the World Club Challenge. David Fifita is a young guy at the Broncos who just could be anything. Anyone in particular you're looking forward to working with, Laurie?
I think those two guys that you mentioned, Jimmy. I think we all know the potential and he lived up to that potential last year, Latrell, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he's come back into the new year and you know, the work that he's put in, because he can certainly go to another level. And then you've got young David Fifita, huge wraps on, and we've seen what he's been able to do. So those two, also looking forward to seeing some of the young guys that haven't really had a lot to do with. There's a young guy in the squad by the name of
Josh Kerr.
Who I've never seen play before, but he's a big strapping lad. The Dragons have got him on their roster, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes and steps up a level. He's been part of the Melbourne Storm system.
Yes.
Been a part of the Dragons pathways, and he's from Redcliffe up there in Queensland. So he's never seen him play, but he gets an opportunity. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he goes and how he handles a step up in class.
And what about for Laurie Daly? Does it whet the appetite about coaching again, Laurie?
Yeah, look, I enjoy coaching, Ray. I think that it's something that's always there in the back of your mind. You've got a passion for it. You believe that you can, you think you've got a lot more to offer. But I just enjoy this one because it's not an overly taxing job in terms of getting the players prepared, because there's a lot of things that happen throughout the week. You only get two sessions and then a captain's run. Mm-hmm. But you've got to make the most of that time. But, yeah, just to answer your question is that, yeah, I'd like to be back involved in coaching at some point, at some time. But look, I'm enjoying that Monday to Friday gig, getting up at 4 a.m.
You got used to that yet, mate?
Sorry?
You never really get used to that, though, do you?
No, you don't. But it's enjoyable. So, look, no, I'm enjoying what I'm doing at the moment. I enjoy working with TK and Jimmy when he's in there as well. But, it's great that we're able to talk sport. It's not out there digging holes, and we're not working hard.
Exactly.
It's having a bit of fun and talking to people, and I'm getting just as much pleasure out of doing that.
You get an approach from the Sharks. Reports in today's newspapers that you're a chance of coaching the Sharks.
Look, I think,
The easy answer to that is, Jimmy, is that, I heard the speculation and there were some rumours going around, but I was sort of deep in conversation with the West Tigers about maybe being part of their system. So I had to make the decision, and, you know, the NRL obviously couldn't do it, and I was quite happy to step back from that and just concentrate on the role there at Sky Sports. But look, I'm always open to having chats with obviously clubs, but yeah, at the moment, mate, signed with you guys, and really looking forward to spending the next 12 months there.
Going to say this facetiously, you're having a bet on this Indigenous v New Zealand Maori game, $1.85 the Indigenous team, the Maori side $1.95 at tab.com.au. And I say that...
You knew it was coming up, didn't you?
Well, I say that because I actually agree with the stance of the NRL around working for a betting company. However, it's very contradictory.
I don't agree
the
with
fact that you are coaching this side where there's betting.
Correct.
Yeah, but I think this is a little bit different in terms of... It's basically an exhibition game. Yes, I understand that, you know, there is some betting being done on this game, but you're not around the players. It's sort of a game where, you know, you're out there to win, obviously. But I think that, you know, for me being Indigenous and being a part, wanting to be a part of this game, I think it's a different, a completely different, actually, to being you know, week in, week out, being a coach in the NRL.
Oh, that's interesting, because that's not what you were saying off-air about Todd Greenberg, but that...
oh, dear. He can get you in trouble, can't he?
Mate, I'm only having a bit of fun, Loz.
I haven't spoken to him in 2 weeks, but anyway.
You might have spoken to him 2 months.
It looks like it might be a bit longer next time. Yeah, exactly. Hey, Loz, great to have you on. Good luck with this game coming up this week. It is an important week, and you've highlighted that. And as you say, the game in some ways is secondary to what goes on during the course of the week. Great to have you on the program as well, mate.
Right, mate. Cheers. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Laurie Daly there. $1.85, the Indigenous team, the New Zealand Maori.
Good thing is
$1.95.
The footy's back, Jim.
The footy is back. And by the way, I like the Maoris at that price. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more.
Don't forget, 9 a.m. Monday morning, Punters Post-Mortem with me, TK, The Duff, Dino and Glenn Munsey. A full wrap of a cracking Warwick Farm meeting with the baby stepping out in the $2 million English millennium. And in Melbourne, it's the start of the Group 1 for the CF4 Stakes. Punters Post-Mortem, Monday morning.
Dynamic Syndications invites you to join Jerry Harvey and Kieran Maher Racing in a high-quality yearling filly. Buy Zoostar, the hottest young sire in Australia, champion first crop sire and now leading second crop sire. Our filly is from Dane Hill mare Moonflute, a Group 3 winner and Group 1 place. Join Dynamic Jerry Harvey and Kieran Maher Racing in this fabulous filly at $12,885 per share. For info, visit dynamicsyndications.com or call 1-800-619-999. AFSL 3360808.
Get behind Place of Purpose, Australia's new not-for-profit raffle. You could win big with $500,000 in prizes on offer in every raffle. Plus, $5 from every $10 ticket directly supports a local grassroots sporting club or charity of your choice. With Place of Purpose, it's a win-win. Tickets available online at playforpurpose.com.au. And please, play responsibly. New South Wales permit number GOCAU/2086. Wideline Windows and Doors can help make your next build or home reno a success. Drop into any showroom and check out their extensive range of quality aluminium and timber designs, all backed by a 7-year guarantee. Any size, any shape, any space. Wideline's experts will help create the perfect frame for your view. There's never been a better time to take a closer look at Wideline Windows and Doors. Showrooms open at Port Macquarie, Broadmeadow, Tuggera, Rosebery and Parramatta.
On Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
Yeah, final six and a half minutes of the program. Just before we get to our Victorian listener, China Doll, third question, long-time listener award. You have to tell us, what two other sports did Glenn McGrath play as a youngster? He mentioned two sports specifically. So there's your third question. Call now if you think you know. $150 voucher courtesy of China Doll, chinadoll.com. www.vicsports.com.au. The number is 1353 53. Let's go to our Victorian listener now. And by the way, I don't know if you were listening earlier in the program or asleep on the couch, Trent, but there were some disparaging comments that were made earlier about Victorians, and I'd just like to distance myself from those comments.
You
right
made
now.
Them.
Oh, sorry. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Jimmy. Just scurrilous from you, whether it's Victoria or Laurie Daly trying to stir up a hornet's nest. And hello to you as well, Ray.
A hornet's nest?
A hornet's nest, you mean. Good morning, Trent.
What's a hornet's nest?
They're different, Victorians.
They're different Victorians, aren't they?
It's a good law, man, Trent. Hey, Trent, a couple of big bash games on this afternoon.
Just the one, Ray.
Oh, sorry, not the Darcy Sixers, yeah.
Hope the Stars get pumped.
Well, they're not exactly accustomed to winning when they need to, Jimmy. So we'll see what happens this afternoon. They're $1.70, though, against the Sydney Sixers at $2.15. It's a 2:45 start at the MCG for the Stars. High bat Marcus Stoinis is a $3.50 favourite. He's been in great form. Hopefully he can be in good form today. While for the Sydney Sixers high bat, Daniel Hughes is the $4 favourite. James Vince at $4.50. And with the Big Bash, well, five teams can't go in the four. You've got the Hobart Hurricanes, who are the $3 favourites, the Sydney Sixers and the Melbourne Renegades, both at four, and the Brisbane Heat and the Melbourne Stars, they are at seven. But pretty simple equation for the Stars, fellas. They've got to win, otherwise they'll be watching the Big Bash semi-finals, which start on Thursday night.
Two games in the NBL. We've already spoken about that with Brad Rosen. 36ers up against Melbourne United, Wildcats and the Kings.
They will be absolute rippers here, Jimmy. The 2:50 start over in Adelaide, where you've got the 36ers $1.95 and Melbourne United looking to bounce back at $1.85. So there's barely anything in it there, and there's all the jockeying for, well, home playoff series. And then the 5:20 start at RAC Arena with the Red Army, where you've got the Perth Wildcats up against the Sydney Kings. The Perth Wildcats $1.65. And the Sydney Kings, yes, they were too good for Melbourne United, saying that through gritted teeth. On Friday night, they're at $2.25. The line there is 2.5. But certainly for Sydney, it'll be a tough one because you've played home and then you're travelling all the way to Perth for the afternoon game today. But obviously looking to get that top spot, and if you're able to, have home court throughout the grand final series.
Yep, go those Kings. Blockbuster in the A-League this afternoon too. Melbourne Victory versus Perth Glory.
Big one here, Ray. You've got second against first on the A-League ladder, and Mossy's spoken about it. Melbourne Victory against Perth. You've got Melbourne Victory at $2.20, the draw at $3.55, and Perth $3.10. And a good chance for either side to just break away a touch, particularly with Melbourne City having the draw last night and Sydney FC slipping up on Friday night. In the EPL, there's a couple of matches overnight. A 12:30 start at Wembley Stadium, where Tottenham, they're $1.68. At home to Leicester City. There's still a sniff of the Premier League title, but I think it'll either be Liverpool or Manchester City. And speaking of Manchester City, they're in action 3:00 in the morning against Chelsea at Etihad Stadium, where Manchester City, their dominant favourites at $1.48. The draw's $4.20 and Chelsea $6.50. And just having a peek at the EPL title updated after what happened overnight, you've got Manchester City $1.90. Liverpool $2 and Tottenham $19. Just for yourself, Jimmy, Manchester United $101, but it'd be an absolute miracle if they could somehow win that. Probably stick to the UEFA Champions League. You've also touched on Friday's night's All-Star game at Amy Park, where the Indigenous team are $1.85 and the Maori team are $1.95. And there is UFC 234 at Rod Laver Arena today. Unfortunately, a body blow with Rob Whittaker having to be withdrawn due to an abdominal hernia, but there's still plenty of fights and there's plenty happening. The Dubbo Country Championships qualifier, you can check out all those markets and plenty more at tab.com.au.
Just getting this right, the Melbourne Stars are playing at home, Melbourne United's playing away, Melbourne Victory's playing at home, then the Indigenous All-Stars game is at Melbourne on Friday night, and then your UFC 2-3. Anyone would think Melbourne is the sporting capital of the country.
Probably is.
Yeah. Your thoughts, not mine.
Good on you, Trent.
We'll speak again next week.
Thank you, guys.
See you, mate.
Trent Lanscale from tab.com.au.
And, James, we've got a winner of our China Doll $150 voucher.
So the answers to the questions are Liverpool was the team that Glenn Schofield got up to watch this morning. Rats could carry saddles around Brookvale Oval. And tennis and or basketball were the two sports that Glenn McGrath played as well as a youngster. And Dave from Wattle Grove is our China.
Dave.
Is that Dave, our man that gets on the quiz?
Yeah, and SMS is a lot.
SMS, yeah.
Good on him.
Yeah, good on you, Dave. You'll
well
enjoy
done,
that. Fantastic. Coming up on Racing HQ, Dubbo preview with Mick Wallace, an emphasis on the country championship qualifier. Your tip in that?
A Martin place pick.
Priscilla Looker is going to look at Taree. And, of course, BSB back tomorrow morning at 5:30. Before we get to that, Raymond, we have to say who is our winner of our Wingman Winks combo today, the best contribution.
Who have you decided upon, James?
A special mention to Don from Carlton, but I made it a rule in 2019 to give you nothing. So
you can't say that, poor guy. He's doing his best.
I can. Yeah, I can say that. But Peter, who rang up early and mentioned Tony Slaggy Miller and Jack Iverson.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
There's two guys who were getting it done late. In their careers, and a special mention to James Howard Marshall, or James Marshall Howard, who married Anna Nicole Smith. She was 26, he was 92.